This is The State of Things. I'm Adam Hochberg, sitting in for Melinda Penkava. Patrick Ballantyne was 29 years old when he was first appointed to the state Senate. That was 10 years ago, and since then, the Wilmington Republican has risen quickly in state politics. He became the GOP leader of the Senate, served three terms in that position, and now is running his first statewide campaign. In July, he won the Republican primary for governor, defeating five other candidates, including a couple who started the race much better known. His next goal is knocking off incumbent Democratic Governor Mike Easley. A few weeks ago, Patrick Ballantyne won the endorsement of the State Employees Association, the first Republican ever to do that. Today on The State of Things, we're talking with Republican candidate for Governor Patrick Ballantyne. Patrick, thanks for joining us.
Adam, it's my pleasure to be here. I'm very grateful that you invited me.
We're also joined by WUNC's Laura Leslie, who's been covering the governor's race. Laura,
thanks.
Glad to have you. And we welcome your calls this hour. If you want to talk with Patrick Ballantyne, give us a call at 1-877-962-9862. We should say at the outset that we have also invited Governor Easley to appear on this program sometime between now and the election, and we have not yet heard a response from his campaign. So, Senator Ballantyne, we're especially happy to have you here.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and there's no substitute for showing up. I understand that the governor just drags his feet and has done this to a lot of people, so don't feel bad. He doesn't show up in many places.
Well, for people who aren't familiar with you or are just beginning to follow the race, give us a brief introduction. Tell us who you are and why you're running for governor.
All right. Well, I'm Patrick Ballantyne. I'm from Wilmington. I have a wonderful wife, Lisa, of 13 years, and a little angel who's 5 years old. Her name is Wilker. I've served in the North Carolina Senate for 10 years and became the Republican leader in December of 1998. And I believe I have a lot of experience in state government because of that service. I know what works in state government, and I know what doesn't work. And I know under the current administration there is just a total lack of leadership. So I decided that I would run, and I won the Republican primary, and now I'm running against the incumbent governor, and I believe in the next 40 days people will see the stark differences between us as far as our records, our platforms, and our vision. And I fully expect to win this election, and I see a bright future for this great state.
As we said, you're 39 years old. That's younger than any governor currently serving anywhere in the country.
I didn't know that.
What do you have to say to people who question whether you've got enough gray hair to be ready for this job?
Well, my hair is getting grayer all the time, I can tell you that. I know that Governor Scott was 39, and Governor Hunt was 39, and Governor Holzhauser was 38. So North Carolinians like energetic governors, and I'm very active in my campaigning. I show up everywhere. I've been to all 100 counties. And I'm going to be very active as governor. I want to work for the people, and I consider it an honor and a public service.
In your campaign, actually, for the primary, I think you surprised a lot of people by beating both Vinroot and Kobe for the nomination. And I know that you credit that to the fact that you do show up, and you did go to all 100 counties, and I think it made a big difference for you. But during the primary, some of your opponents criticized you for being less conservative than they were. And they said maybe you weren't conservative enough to really represent the Republican electorate in North Carolina. How do you define yourself or position yourself politically?
Well, I call myself a new generation of conservative. And what I mean by that is on core principles, both fiscally and socially, I am conservative. But I do it with a fresh face. I do it with a smile. I do it with an open-door policy. I really believe in the big tent. I really believe in reaching out to African-Americans and Latinos and Democrats and those who have never been involved in politics before. So I am very open, and I love being with people and listening to people and learning from people. And that's just a different breed of Republican that most people don't understand, and it's very hard for them to label me because I propose tax cuts and I'm socially conservative, but I've won environmental awards and I've been endorsed by black newspapers and I attend Latino festivals, so that these old school labels really don't apply to me.
We have Francis on the line from Raleigh talking about the primary. Francis, you have a question about an issue that one of the other candidates in the primary raised a lot.
Yes, I do. This is not an issue. This is a problem, and I'd like to know how Candidate Ballantyne intends to solve it. Candidate Ballantyne, as you're quite aware, have a great many illegal aliens residing unlawfully in this state, not only from Mexico, but many other countries, in clear violation of federal law. There are a number of solutions to this problem, and I would like to know what yours would be if you're elected.
Well, first of all, as you know, the Immigration Naturalization Service is one of the worst bureaucracies ever known to mankind, and they've got major, major flaws with the system. That's a federal entity, and we need to change that. In North Carolina, however, at a state level, there are some things that we can do. We don't need to be issuing driver's licenses to illegal aliens if that is the sole form of North Carolina ID. We've got to make sure that on a state level, we do everything we can to stop the flow of illegal immigrants. We've got employers that have a blind eye and hire anybody regardless of citizenship. So we've got a major problem here. There's no question about that. And I don't believe this governor has done much, not to criticize him solely because it's mostly a federal issue, but there are some things at the state level that we can do. I believe Tennessee and their governor, I believe he's a Democrat governor, just came up with a new type of driver's license. So there are things that we need to do at the state level, and I'm going to do what I can to curb illegal immigration.
Let me talk to you a bit about your budget plan. You've proposed a pretty massive tax relief initiative. Relief in the personal income tax, relief in the corporate income tax, the capital gains tax, a depreciation credit for North Carolina businesses. Mm. Talking about, by your figures, about $1.2 billion a year in tax relief?
Right. We passed the largest tax relief in the history of North Carolina in 1995. And those on the left said the sky was falling, we can't afford it. The contrary was true. We had five straight years of billion-dollar surpluses, and Abraham Lincoln knew this, John Kennedy knew this, Ronald Reagan knew this, and I knew this. You can't have confiscatory taxes in North Carolina if you want to compete. We have the highest taxes in the South. We have the eighth highest income tax in the nation. We have to lower taxes to a reasonable level so existing businesses can expand and hire new employees and give insurance benefits to their employees, and we are more attractive to recruit new industry. And I'm not an anarchist. I'm not anti-tax. I believe we have to have reasonable taxes. I mean, Oliver Wendell Holmes said taxes are the price that we pay for a civilized society. I believe that. But our taxes right now are too high, and we're not competing with our neighboring states. So I believe lowering taxes, and that sounds like a lot, but in a $30 billion annual budget, and when you look at the gross state product, that's very reasonable. And what that will do will spur our economy and allow us to create more jobs. Businesses and individuals don't put the money that they would give to the government under their pillow. They do something with it. They spend it. They go to Target or Walmart and spend that money. Businesses expand, buy equipment that our neighbors make. So it's just a philosophy that I believe differs from the current governor. He raises taxes three times. I believe we need to lower taxes if we want to compete and create jobs.
As you know, the Constitution in North Carolina requires the budget here to be balanced. We don't have the luxury, if you call it that, of running big deficits like the federal government does. So if we cut $1.2 billion in taxes, we have to find $1.2 billion in spending cuts
right.
to go with that.
Yeah.
Where will those cuts happen?
Well, first of all, let me back up. We do have a constitutional requirement. However, this governor has raided trust funds and used one-time monies that are no longer there. And I believe that he has played some games with the budget to, quote, come up with a balanced budget. He, for instance, put lottery proceeds in his first two budgets, and we don't even have a lottery. So there's some political chicanery going on there. But What I need to do, first of all, is prioritize. You have to prioritize spending. Education and transportation and criminal justice and public safety. We have to look at what our priorities are as a state government, fund those priorities adequately, and then see what we have left. This governor has increased spending 18%. The general fund has increased 18% in his 3 years. And what I'm saying is that's a lot of money. You don't need to increase spending on programs that don't work. So what we need to do is take a step back, look at what works, and what works, let's fund it. And if it doesn't work, we don't need to fund it. I'm not a slasher and a burner. I've got specific proposals like worker training programs. And the governor tries to pound me on this by saying that I don't care about displaced workers. On the contrary, I want to help more displaced workers. But we're wasting money when we have 47 different worker training programs, all with our own administration. We spend over $900 million a year on these programs. I believe we consolidate those. We take the savings from the consolidation of the administrative cost and move those monies into the community colleges. Community colleges are underfunded. To me, they are our priority. We need to better fund our community colleges so displaced workers can go there and get training. And I have many more examples, but I suppose the music means it's a break.
Well, it means we're going to take a short break, but we'll have time to pick that up in just a moment. We're talking with Republican candidate for Governor Patrick Ballantyne. We're also taking your calls at 1-877-962-9862. Support for The State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and from listeners who support WUNC. This is The State of Things. I'm Adam Hochberg. Patrick Ballantyne is our guest today. He's the Republican candidate for governor. He'll face incumbent Democrat Mike Easley and Libertarian candidate Barbara Howe this November 2nd. Also with us today is WUNC's Capitol reporter Laura Leslie. And we're taking your calls at 1-877-962-9862. Patrick, before the break, we were talking about your plan to cut taxes and cut spending. You mentioned one specific place where you think there's waste in state government, worker training.
Rather than actually cutting spending, what I'm saying is if we froze spending, we'd save hundreds of millions of dollars a year. This governor's increased spending 18% in 3 years. That's 6% a year in a recession. So that's clearly not good sound fiscal policy, and I believe it's out of control, actually. But specifically, I remember asking a couple years ago, how many buildings do we own as a state? And nobody knew the answer. And the state auditor didn't know the answer. And I said, well, we need to get that answer. It's probably a few thousand buildings. After several months, they came back and said, well, we approximately own 15,000 buildings. We own them outright. That's dead equity. Many of them are abandoned properties, surplus properties. They estimated that if we sold the surplus abandoned property that we don't use anymore and we own it outright, we could raise $100 million in revenue. These are simple, common-sense solutions. We've never done an inventory analysis of what the state owns. So, again, I'm not a mean-spirited Republican. I'm not a slasher and burner. I believe with common sense we can deliver a better quality service at a competitive price. And that's what my campaign's all about, and that's what my governorship is going to be about.
It seems like, obviously you're not the first person to run for office in North Carolina on a platform of trying to spend money more wisely, but it seems like the devil is in the details on these things, and what one person would consider waste, another person, it's either somebody else's job or it's a program that somebody is dependent upon.
Well, I don't think we've ever had a candidate that can articulate the specifics like I can, though. Another one, these nonprofits. Now, my opponent says, oh, he's against nonprofits. Again, that is just demagoguery. But we have 8,000 nonprofits in this state, all that get taxpayer money. There are 8,000 nonprofits that get our taxpayers' money. Many of them deserve it. Many of them should get more taxpayer money because it's a good investment and they deliver a great service. However, there are many of them, as we've seen in the news lately, that are frauds, that are corrupt, that don't deliver a service, that are just payrolls for fat cats. And there are some that are legitimate organizations that are redundant. They get grant money from the state, and there's another operation six blocks down the street that does the exact same thing. You know, we need to be smarter with our tax dollars. We've laid out specifics on how we're going to do this, and it's over $1 billion.
John in Wilmington, welcome to the State of Things.
Hello.
Hello. You have a question for Senator Ballantyne.
Yes, I sure do. Mr. Ballantyne from Wilmington, but I'm on I-40 heading to the airport. I just passed a global transpark sign, and with 10 years in the Senate, I'm just curious because North Carolina, I think, is in a state of transition with a lot of people losing jobs, and I think enticements is perhaps a way to go, but it bothers me that global transpark was such a flop. And another situation, the FedEx issue out in Greensboro, where we gave big incentives from the state to FedEx for basically a lot of part-time, low-paying jobs. What's your comment?
Well, I'm not sure what sign you passed. There's one that says, you are now entering the Global Transpark Economic Development Zone. And there's another one that says, you are leaving it. So I'm not sure where you are, but I can approximate. We've put $87 million of taxpayer money into the Global Transpark and yielded little to nothing. We have over a 10,000-foot runway there. As you may know, I proposed to give that Global Transpark to Boeing. I wanted to privatize it, make it an industrial park, so it would be on the tax rolls. The local governments would get the ad valorem taxes there. There would be plenty of jobs created, and the state government would receive more tax revenues. Technically, for those lawyers out there, we'd have to sell it to them for a dollar, but that was my offer. I believe the incumbent governor sat on his hands and didn't really negotiate in good faith with Boeing and waited too long. But we've got that asset there. We need to do everything we can to make sure that that we can and can have tenants there, that we can have people utilize it. But I have said that we don't need to put any more tax dollars in it. I believe we need to cut off the spigot. We can do what we can to aggressively try and pursue people to come there, but I don't believe it takes more tax dollars.
And what about the FedEx issue in Greensboro?
Well, FedEx, that was the big sign for the Global Transpark when FedEx, an air cargo company, wouldn't go to our air cargo park in Kinston. I knew we had a problem at GTP. I support FedEx being in our state. I believe they may, as the caller said, have some lower paying jobs, but the ancillary businesses that will be supported will be huge. And all you got to do is look at some of the other FedEx hubs and the hundreds of millions of dollars in job creation by private sector companies that need to be around a hub. I think it'll have a good effect on our state to have FedEx here.
How do you feel about this whole issue of big incentives, the governor's walking around money, the fund that he has to give to private industry to try to attract them to North Carolina?
Well, I don't really like incentives. Incentives are not the best solution. I wish that they would be banned at a federal level. But I also, as a governor, don't want to be handcuffed, and so I won't say never. Unlike some of my opponents in the primary, I refuse to say I would never give incentives because you just don't know what's going to come up. This giving the Global Transpark to Boeing would have been an incentive, but I think it would have been a win-win. I don't like incentives. That's the universe we live in, and right now we need to be very wise with them. We can look at Mercedes. We can look at BMW and what they've done for Alabama and South Carolina. You go to those areas and you just see incredible growth and prosperity. So, you know, we need to be smart. It's a tough issue for people to comprehend because you really have to do trust your leadership. You have to trust your leadership and know that they're aggressively negotiating and there's going to be a balance between the investment and the return.
Patrick, a couple of weeks ago, you received the endorsement of the Political Action Committee of the State Employees Association of North Carolina. And, of course, it's the first time that that group has ever endorsed a Republican for statewide office.
Right.
And, of course, not long after that, you were targeted by the Easley campaign, who said that you would raise taxes, or who said that you told them that you would raise taxes in order to provide the 5% pay raise over 3 years that you'd said that you would give them. What did you say, and how shall we pay for that raise?
First of all, it's a 5% pay raise for 3 years, and I believe that's absolutely critical for state employees. They've been treated like dirt during the Easley administration. I have had 14 employees in my office, and if the employees aren't happy, they're not productive. If they're not productive, I'm not making a profit. In the public sector, if employees aren't happy, they're not productive, and the taxpayers aren't getting their money's worth. So I believe it's good, prudent, conservative, sound principles to treat your employees well. They need a pay raise. They deserve a pay raise. I also told them we were going to have to work together to make sure that some of the bad state employees that they're pulling the wagon for have to get off the payroll. Furthermore, I believe in attrition. I think this 30-year arbitrary date for retirement is ridiculous when people are putting X's on the calendar until their retirement and they have more than 2 years to go. They don't want to be there. They're not productive. I talked about cross-training. If they've been there for 20, 21 years and they're just in a rut and they want to continue to have the security and benefits of state government, they ought to be able to be cross-trained and put somewhere totally different and have a whole new career. I talked about team building. I talk about forming projects, giving blue-collar workers, empowering them and giving them the decision-making ability to try and deliver things in a more efficient way. I believe that if you do that, employees are going to work hard to participate in the decision-making process, and they're gonna say, okay, we deliver it in 10 days. Let's have a goal to deliver it in 7 days. How can we reach that goal? And they can work together and form teams, and then they're going to see two or three of their employees that don't want to participate, and they're going to go, you know, those are the two or three employees that I thought have been sort of dragging their feet for the last few years. Maybe those are the three we recommend to Governor Ballantyne that need to be taken off the payroll. We're going to have some reductions in force. I told the state employees that. I was perfectly honest with them about that. But the thing is, I'm going to have them come to the table. They're going to be with me as we make these decisions. They haven't had that opportunity before. It's a whole new way of treating your employees. It's a better management issue, and they're just excited to have a governor that has an open ear.
Well, the price for that raise, though, is estimated at $1.5 billion, which is another, you know, what that brings to is $1.2 billion in tax cuts, $1.5 billion in raises. That leaves out about 17% of our current state budget. That's a lot of spending that you're going to have to make up. Where's the money going to come from?
Well, it's not that much because we have a $30 billion annual budget. But let me back up. The governor says that I lied. I think that's inappropriate and unbecoming of any leader to use that word because I was completely honest and forthright. Secondly, he says that $1.5 billion, which it's really, that's the maximum it would be if there were no reductions in force, if there was no consolidation, if there was no efficiencies. Thirdly, I believe that he's being disingenuous because that $1.5 billion difference, if you believe that number, means that he's giving 0% pay raises for the next 3 years for state employees. I'd like him to state whether that's true. If he's proposing a 2 or 3%, that number is half of that. So I think he's been incredibly misleading, and that's the reason why he didn't get their endorsement, because I'm open and honest with him and I listen to him, and he refuses to show up and pay any attention to the state workers of North Carolina.
Carl and Kerry, you have a comment on this whole state employee endorsement issue?
Oh, yes, I do, but back to the FedEx in Greensboro instead of Global Transport. I think that's a catastrophic dropping of the ball, since we need the $87 million in eastern North Carolina instead of reconstructing Greensboro. But
the $87 million has already been spent on the Global Transport, so that's not going toward Greensboro.
I was talking about the new runways and relocating people and environmental effects in Greensboro. But let me move on to the other thing about when Dana Cope met with you, and the next day the headlines read, you know, one of the largest employee organizations in the state endorsed the Republican candidate. I was just wondering, you as a politician, how do you deal with it being turned around almost immediately by the opposition, and the long-term effects of that? And do you expect state employees to turn themselves in? And I'd also like you to comment on the heavy overload of government offices such as the Department of Agriculture that has reduced its staff since the Meg Scott FIPS almost 50%. Do you think you can cut the State Department's 50% that a scandal did?
Are you saying that the state agencies have already been cut to the bone, in your opinion?
No, I'm saying that the Department of Agriculture, I have the staffing diagram, had like 30 people on it. And, of course, one person, Mike Blanton, ended up taking about six of those jobs. And then, of course, it's now down to half of what it was after the election. I was wondering if there's that much waste in all of the departments in the state where we could cut out hundreds of thousands of salaries from the top and then expect the lower rung state employees to start turning in their non-productive coworkers.
Well, let me just say exactly what I told the state employees. I think there were 20 of them in the room when they interviewed me for 2 hours, and the governor further insulted them after the endorsement of me by saying he didn't even attempt to get that political committee's endorsement. Well, he interviewed with them too, so I don't understand that. But what I told them was, with all due respect to the white collars, we need to listen to the blue collar workers who are actually performing the services. I truly believe that there is an incredible amount of middle management that is layered with bureaucracy. That's where most of the savings will be. There's no doubt about it. I would never say that I believe a 50% cut in an agency is worthy across the board. I mean, are there some? Sure. There are probably some that deserve to be abolished entirely. That would be 100% savings. But that I don't know. I want to listen to the people actually providing the service.
Let's move on to Eric in Chapel Hill. Hi, you're on the State of Things, Eric.
Hi, Mr. Ballantyne. I was wondering, from what I understand, you voted for a number of budgets leading up to the financial crisis that our state found itself in around the year 2000. And I was wondering, I mean, now you're talking again about, you know, $1.2 billion in tax cuts and $1.5 billion in state employee pay raises.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've read the talking points of the governor. Let me explain. I've only voted for two budgets in my 10 years. One was in 1995. We passed the largest tax reduction in North Carolina history. We flatlined spending. We passed education reform and accountability, tort reform. We repealed the prison cap. We did some incredible things in that budget. The next budget I voted for was in 1997. That was the last budget I voted for. 1997 did increase state spending, but it came from a lower baseline. Because we flatlined spending in 95, we had a much lower baseline, so it's really unfair to cite the percentage there. But let me tell you what we did with that spending. We gave teachers a massive pay raise. It was a Democrat and Republican goal to increase teacher pay to the national average. That was a major, major part of the spending. Further, we hadn't had any capital improvements in years. I believe it's good, sound, conservative policy to have money for capital improvements like HVACs and roofs, and we didn't have any money for repairs and renovations, so we put, I believe, $250,000 in R&R. On top of that, we provided tax more tax relief, which is included in spending. And then on top of that, we had $500 million in a rainy day fund. State government forces local governments to have a rainy day fund. We hadn't had one that was anywhere near adequate. So we put $500 million in a rainy day fund. Thank God we did, because 2 years later we had a major flood called Floyd, and we needed to use that rainy day fund for the rainy day. So those talking points that the governor has are completely without merit, and I think I just shot holes all through them explaining to you my position.
What do you think? You talked about some of the interesting accounting techniques that have been used over the last several years during the budget crunch to try to make the budget balanced, or at least appear balanced. What's it going to take money-wise just to get the state budget on firm actuarial grounds?
Well, I mean, even the governor this week says that the temporary taxes are going to come off next year. Of course, he promised not to raise taxes. Then he promised that they were temporary. Now, in an election year, he's promising that, oh, yeah, I do mean that they're going to come off next year. You can't believe this governor when it comes to taxes. I've been very consistent. My whole campaign is about tax relief for working families and small businesses. And this governor has the nerve to say, I'm for tax increases? It's preposterous. We have to restructure. We haven't restructured state government in decades. Decades. We have to restructure. We have to look at what works and what doesn't work. We have to prioritize spending. And there are going to be some tough choices. And that's why the state workers of North Carolina are going to be at the table to help me make these decisions. But we've got... It's going to take courage, and it's going to take a lot of leadership, because especially when you have the other side demagoguing these issues, that makes it tough.
We're talking with Patrick Ballantyne, the Republican candidate for governor. Just ahead, more of your calls at 1-877-962-9862 on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Adam Hochberg. We're speaking this hour with Republican gubernatorial candidate Patrick Ballantyne. He spent 10 years in the state Senate, was chosen Senate Republican leader, and served in that role for, what, about three terms?
I believe so.
So about 6 years as Senate Republican leader, and then you resigned from the legislature earlier this year to run for governor. We're taking calls for Senator Ballantyne at 1-877-962-9862. Let's go to Jeannie in Durham. Hi, welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, thank you very much. My question for Senator Ballantyne is one about funding for the public schools in this state. I'm the parent of two children who attend the Durham Public Schools, and over the last 2 years I've watched the state cut the education budget by $72 million and increase the ratio of teachers' assistants to students from 1 to 26 students to now 1 in 40 students gets a teacher's assistant. I'd like to know, so my understanding is Mr. Ballantyne has consistently voted to cut funding for public education, and I want to know what his plans are for the public schools in the state.
He's shaking his head no.
Yeah. Where do you get that, Jeannie?
It's Jeannine. Jeannie. I read about that in the newspaper, and it wasn't the News and Observer, the Herald Sun.
Well, the Herald Sun is a good paper, but I'm not sure where in the world they're getting that.
Well, could you comment on your position?
Sure, absolutely.
On how you're going to fund the public schools?
Sure. I remember in one of those budgets that I did vote for, we cut the Department of Public Instruction funding by 50%. 50%. That was one of the ones. It was Democrats and Republicans voted for this. And I didn't hear one peep. I didn't hear one person complaining. That showed me there was an incredible amount of waste there. That was, I believe, almost 10 years ago, and that pink marble palace over there called the Department of Public Instruction is filled with bureaucrats who do nothing but think of more paperwork to push on teachers. We need to take money from the education bureaucracy and give it to teachers. You can't have a quality education without a quality teacher. I strongly support that. I met an eighth grade teacher in Mecklenburg County who was told that she had to use a certain textbook. The problem is no students had that textbook. They said they couldn't afford textbooks for the kids, yet they put a $10,000 gazebo out of the front entranceway to pretend that everything was great at the school. This is a matter of priorities. We have to prioritize our education dollars. I've not voted to cut education. In fact, I want to take more money from the bureaucracy and put it into the classroom and empower parents and principals and teachers. I met a senior in high school in my hometown of Wilmington, a New Hanover County high school senior, who couldn't read. He couldn't spell three-letter words. Now, that breaks my heart. And what I'm going to do about that is change the system. Right now, I have a plan I call Read to Succeed. Every single second grader will know how to read before they finish the second grade. We're going to utilize our greatest asset, our seniors, our retirees, and big buddies and mentors, and bring them in and help them and put that child on the path to success. You're not going to be on that path if you can't read. This gentleman I was telling you about who was a senior in high school, I didn't meet him in high school. I met him at the New Hanover County Courthouse. He was in the criminal justice system. We have to improve education. There has been a lot of talk by the other side of the aisle that tries to steal this issue. This is not a partisan issue. When Governor Hunt challenged us to be number one in America in education by 2010, in his last State of the State address, all the Capitol reporters came up to me as the Republican leader and said, "What do you think about his boast to be number one?" I said, "Amen. Amen. That ought to be our goal. And if it's our goal, we ought to fund it adequately. And in many cases, we're going to need to increase funding for education. Like I said earlier, the community colleges are terribly underfunded. I don't know where you're getting that. That is demagoguery. It's Democrat talking points. I am going to improve education. We're going to benchmark. These testing procedures we have now are an abomination. I support testing, but what they've got now is a joke. We can prioritize monies in education and really make improvements, and I still strive for excellence and that goal to be number one.
Let me ask you about the Pink Palace in Raleigh. You've made those comments before about the Department of Public Instruction being a bloated bureaucracy.
Yes.
In Raleigh.
Yes.
And
it's bloated at the local level as well.
The Republican candidate for state school superintendent, the Republican candidate, Bill Fletcher, was
right.
Quoted as saying, his exact quote was, "The gubernatorial candidate is not properly informed." And he says that department has taken, as you said, a 50% cut. And he says they are just stretched to the bone. There is no more waste there. In fact, it's a struggle for them to do what they need to do with the small staff they have.
Well, that's why I'm running for governor and he's not, because I believe I understand the state budget better than he does. And I believe he's since backpedal a little bit on those statements. We got a list of state employees in that building after I made these comments, and they gave me a list of people. And I know personally people that work in that building that aren't even listed. They don't even list them because they're county employees. The counties think they need to send somebody over in that building because if they don't, they're not going to get any help from them. It's a disaster over there. We have an average of 13 superintendents in every school district. 13. We have the superintendent, the deputy superintendent, the assistant superintendent, the deputy assistant superintendent. 13 per school district. They make the huge salaries. The problem in North Carolina is that one of the lowest paid administrators in North Carolina gets paid more than the highest paid teacher in North Carolina. In a Ballantyne administration, we're going to turn that model on its head. We have great teachers in our state aspiring to move up. They call it moving up. They aspire to become administrators so they can pay their bills for their family. Education and teaching is the highest calling. We need to have good people in the classroom.
What do you think about merging some of the school systems in counties like Orange County, where you still have city schools and a separate county school system?
You talk about controversy. It sounds good, but boy, I've been to some of these. I think there are 113 or 116 school systems in only 100 counties, so there are some double ones. And everybody seems to think that that's not the right answer. And it may be that we even need more. We need smaller school systems so you can really have better control over what's going on. These school systems are so large and so bureaucratic that we're wasting hundreds of millions of dollars. Two-thirds of our general fund monies go to education, and we're still near the bottom in reading, math, and science. That's unacceptable. Unacceptable, and I won't tolerate that. We have to do better in North Carolina. You've never seen educational improvement until I'm governor.
Chris in Durham, thanks for waiting. You're on the State of Things.
Hi, Senator Ballantyne.
Hi.
I'm wondering about mental health care, something we expect to happen, like electricity. We don't really want to really think about it much. We just want the mentally ill and floorless psychotics sort of not to be interfering with us in the community. North Carolina has some of the top universities in the country with cutting-edge psychiatric care that helps patients not only be safe but to contribute to the society. However, the funding for mental health care in North Carolina has been gutted in the name of transition to community-based, privatized care, which won't accept and can't manage the sickest patients.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to help us stop a public health crisis from turning into a public safety crisis?
I'm glad you brought that up. I mention that everywhere I go in my speeches. And you're right. Most politicians don't care about the mentally ill because the mentally ill don't vote usually, and that's sad. Again, I told Laura, I'm a conservative Republican, but if government can't help those that can least help themselves, what good is government? And we have a crisis brewing in North Carolina with the mentally ill. We've got a plan that sounds good. It's based on political correctness. These horrible big mental institutions are terrible. Let's send them back to the community. Well, that could be a disaster. They need professional help. They need the best professional help, and they need 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week help. So we've got to take a real strong consideration of whether or not we need to change that policy. This governor took 100% of the money from the Mental Health Trust Fund. We have a mental health trust fund in North Carolina, and he took every single penny of that. Everyone hears about him raiding the highway trust fund. He raided the mental health trust fund. If a Republican did that, he would be all over the front pages of every paper. He would be considered a monster. I am outraged that he took this money from the mentally ill. I have supported the CAPDA program. It's about priorities, Adam and Laura. In an amendment to the budget, I said, and I went to Carolina, and I love the Tar Heels, but I said, we don't need, as taxpayers, to be funding the operating costs of the Dean Dome when we're cutting the mentally ill. Let's move those monies to help the CAPDA program. And it was rejected, and every single Democrat voted against my amendment. It's time for real leadership, sir, and I'm going to provide that.
Lewis and Raleigh, hello. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello. Mr. Ballantyne, if you're a voted governor, how do you intend to deal with the issue of hog farms and hog waste and hog waste lagoons in eastern North Carolina?
Well, there's no question in my mind that we can have a thriving, prosperous hog industry and be harmonious with a clean environment. There's no doubt in my mind that the technologies are there. We have great researchers at NC State University and elsewhere that are ready, willing, and able to implement these technologies. I am a leading edge, forward-thinking person, and I want this state to have both a clean environment and a hog industry. So that's what I'm going to strive to do, and we need to get that done. I believe we can do that, and I don't really particularly like hog lagoons or the smell. I mean, I drive home on I-40 and have to breathe that in too. So, I mean, it's a real issue, but it's a solvable issue. It's just going to take reasonable people that have the initiative to get it done.
As we get toward the top of the hour, I want to run through a few hot-button issues and then quickly get your opinions on a number of things that have been debated in the legislature a lot over the years.
We've been through quite a few hot-button issues. I got a few more. That's why I want to debate the governor. The governor refuses to debate me. We have so many important issues in this state. I think the people deserve a debate.
Well, here's a few. Proposed moratorium on executions?
A very, very legitimate question. I oppose a moratorium on the death penalty because we've been now 18 months talking about it, and I said, why don't we study the flaws? I mean, many of the people opposed to the death penalty are doing this under the guise of a moratorium, and they cite some problems. Well, let's fix the problems. That's a de facto abolition of the death penalty. And the governor sat on his hands. I don't know where he is on that issue. I don't know where he is on many of these issues. I believe talking with many victims and families We still need a death penalty in North Carolina, and I don't support a moratorium. I did, however, vote against the execution of the mentally retarded. I believe if they don't have the mens rea, they don't have the intent and the guilty mind, they shouldn't be executed. I'm reasonable on this.
What about gay marriage?
I don't support gay marriage. Marriage has been defined since the beginning of mankind as the union between one man and one woman. And I don't support gay marriages. I have a lot of gay friends, but I don't believe we need to be sanctioning gay marriages as a state.
What about abortion? You were a pretty vocal opponent of abortion during your time in the legislature. In the last session, I think you, you were in on 4 bills that mm-hmm. were a waiting period, mm-hmm. parental notification, notarization. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us?
I am opposed to abortion. I believe that life begins at conception. I believe that we've got a terrible scourge in America called abortion. But you have to change people's minds and hearts. And, you know, a lot of people focus on the woman. Let me tell you, the young men in this country are a lot to blame, and we've got to change. We've got to change young people's minds on what this issue is all about. I would like to see abortions go away. They're not going to go away because it's a Supreme Court issue. What we need to do is culturally change attitudes and change people's hearts and minds.
Stephen and Raleigh, you've got a question about another of those hot button issues.
Yes, sir. Mr. Valentine, I wanted to know where you stood on a state lottery.
I don't support a state lottery either for many issues, for many reasons, rather. One is it's less than 1% of our annual revenues. I could take anybody off the street and find more than 1% savings in state government. It's not a panacea. In fact, I would say it's fraudulent to say that the lottery will solve all of our problems when it's less than 1% of our annual revenues.
Hit you up on one more, the outlying landing field that the Navy proposes down east.
We are an incredibly supportive state for the military. It's an $18 billion annual boost to our economy. We need to work with the military and send strong signals that we care about the military. I want to even grow the military presence here. So we need to be very careful what we do with this OLF situation. We need to make sure that obviously the location affects the least amount of people. We need to make sure that the location is not going to harm the environment, and that's in the best possible location that will have the least deleterious effect on our natural resources. But that said, we can't be totally against an OLF. If the Navy says it's an absolute necessity for the protection of this country and for the freedom we enjoy, then we need to have it. And not everybody's going to be happy, but we need to make sure it's in the best location possible.
But why would it be in this state necessarily? Why North Carolina?
Well, because the experts, the United States Navy, says that it needs to be within 100 miles of the base, and they need it for the training, and they need no ambient light. They need total darkness. They need it to be out in those rural areas. That's what they're telling me. So we need to make sure that we listen to the concerns of the families there. We need to absolutely listen to the environmentalists. But think about this. Why would the Navy want to put a $30 million plane into a flock of birds? I think they're more sensible than that. So we've still got work to do on that. We've got a commission looking at it, and I think we'll make the right decision.
Patrick Ballantyne, Republican candidate for governor. Thanks for being here.
Great to be here. Always a pleasure.
Sorry we didn't have time to get to more calls. Maybe we'll see you back here again.
Thank you.
And we will say again that we also have invited Governor Easley to be on the show at some point. We haven't heard from him, but Governor, if you're listening, we'd love to have you come on. Thank you for listening to the State of Things. If you have a comment about our show, drop us an email here at sot@wunc.org. Support for the State of Things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. I'm Adam Hochberg.